Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. President Donald Trump says he's approved disaster relief funds for Wisconsin. And Immigration and Customs Enforcement ramps up arrests in Milwaukee. Plus, the U.S. Supreme Court says political parties can spend unlimited amounts of money. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for July 3rd.
I'm Ani Van Wagtendonk.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Welcome to Rewind. Busy week this week, as always. Starting with a little bit of surprise news out of social media, which is that President Donald Trump announced that he's giving more than $22 million in emergency funds to Wisconsin as requested over the spring storms. However, he announced it on Truth Social. He addressed it to Congressman Tom Tiffany, who is the leading Republican candidate for governor, but notably not currently the governor. And he also named a bunch of other Republican members of the Wisconsin delegation in this announcement. Your team reached out to Tony Evers' team and said, what do you guys know about this? And the answer was essentially, not much.
No. And we're still waiting for details. We called FEMA the day after the announcement, have not heard back from them yet. Now, Tony Weed, Congressman from Green Bay, is saying it's going to go up toward northeastern Wisconsin. But the original request from May covered a swath that ran from Rock County in southern Wisconsin all up to Bayfield. So it's a massive area they asked for help
to address. And we should say, and it was a bipartisan request for that help.
I think we did a letter that everybody signed on to in the delegate, except for Ron Johnson, who also got mentioned in the Truth Social post. And the governor, not very happy about this. Basically, he'll wait and he'll believe it when he sees it. Also, I saw him doing an interview. He's doing his pothole patrol right now. And use some colorful language. The governor does some of his angry about the fact that somebody is, in his mind, playing politics with disaster aid. So remember, there's actually a lawsuit pending right now. Like 22 states have sued because they're saying it's harder for blue states to get aid than red states. The president, I believe, listed at least a half dozen states getting aid, along with Wisconsin, on the evening he put this post out. Most are red states. Michigan's the one example. I believe you noticed that there was a governor mentioned in that post. It wasn't mentioned in our post, though.
Yeah, exactly. So Gretchen Whitmer was named in that post, which reflected, it's very similar in language to the Wisconsin post, but he says that he told Gretchen Whitmer, a Democrat, directly, and she confirmed that. And so, and you know, Gretchen Whitmer has made a little bit more kind of overtures to Trump, but she's also, and her state is involved in many of the same lawsuits against his administration that Wisconsin has signed on to. So interesting there that he still, you know, made a direct kind of outreach to her, not to Tony Evers.
So if you were affected by the storms in April, you might be getting the opportunity to apply for aid. We just don't know yet. And once we do, we'll let you know as soon as we can find out.
Right. And so it seems like they don't know sort of which counties are going to be covered, which there were many major weather events of that time, sort of like which ones are actually covered. And from what I've seen of coverage in Michigan, those same open questions. My colleague Rich Kramer reached out to the White House for comment, and they referred him to the all caps Truth, which I believe is a reference to the social media post. So lots of unanswered questions there. Also, this over the last week, there's been a huge surge in ICE activity, a report of up to 10,000 arrests across the country in the last week, including at least 39 confirmed in Wisconsin, most in Milwaukee, and then some in the Waukesha area and Madison as well. And what's a couple of things interesting from this. First of all, obviously just a ton of citizen video, which is kind of like a trend that we're seeing over this period. Some really quite violent interactions from these ICE officers. And then there's a back and forth. In Milwaukee, they have this no mask ordinance for law enforcement. Now a law enforcement union has come out and said that that is making it impossible for law enforcement to carry out what they're doing. Meanwhile, leaders in Milwaukee are saying they are violating this ordinance. And so there's a little bit of that, you know, law enforcement v. local officials kind of tension going on.
We haven't seen like we saw in Minneapolis, where there was like this kind of massive surge on focus on one city. So I'm not that well versed in everything happening in the country so far, but I'm just noticing that we're not seeing like the protests in the streets like we saw in Minneapolis and Chicago. Maybe those are going to come, but it's not as contentious as it was in those communities. The reason I bring that up is, remember, we talked in February that this is going to be a headline all the way through November, because it was turning the immigration issue against Donald Trump and his administration. It's bad for Republicans. So I'm watching now, are the ICE folks trying to be a little bit more tactful in how they carry things out, or being a little more politically sensitive because of what they saw in Minneapolis and Chicago?
I mean, and at the same time, you know, Voces de la Frontera, for example, held a press conference where people talked about the ways that they were, like, ripped away from family members. And so I think part of it also is that there's, like, an element of surprise to the surge. It obviously wasn't, like, announced that there was going to be a big uptick in arrests. This also comes as that lawsuit from Voces and the ACLU is continuing. You guys reported this week that they're trying to kind of move it along a little bit faster. This is a lawsuit challenging the use of ICE detainers in local jails. So essentially where local sheriffs will hold onto people suspected of being in the country illegally longer if they've already been detained for other reasons. And so that's been ongoing for many months now.
It was filed in September. The sheriffs who were targeted, five of them, moved in late December to get it into federal court. A federal judge said in the late spring, no, you waited too long. Now the Supreme Court has it. The sheriffs have now asked the court to, like, basically put on hold as they try to get back into federal court. In the meantime, I believe the U.S., the Trump administration has tried to intervene in that lawsuit, trying to argue that it should be in federal court. So we're basically at a procedural loggerheads right now. And the question is, will the state Supreme Court put its issues on hold while this is going on?
Yeah. And is this, you know, a sign of a summer of this type of activity, which, as you say, could really be on the forefront of people's minds going into our primaries, other primaries around the country, and then certainly the November elections? Obviously, this was also a huge week at the Supreme Court. A lot of decisions came down, two of which were really big, but maybe not as specifically aimed or related to Wisconsin. So obviously, the really big one was the question about birthright citizenship, 5-4 decision maintaining birthright citizenship as law of the land. And then another one that essentially said that communities can enact bans on transgender athletes. And that's something that's obviously been a major political issue here in Wisconsin. And then the one that really kind of caught my eye was this one about campaign finance, because it allows the national political parties to spend as much as they want in coordination with various candidates. And we already have a version of that here in Wisconsin. The state parties can raise and spend as much as they want. And we've obviously seen that kind of translate into huge amounts of money being spent in the judicial races in particular. Republican law from 2015 that Democrats have made better use of. And one liberal attorney that I spoke to said, essentially, this is now exporting that Wisconsin model to the national level.
So I've heard that line a lot this week, too, about kind of the parallels. There are some nuances. So the state law allows unlimited contributions to political parties, unto transfers to candidates. This one's more about coordination and really gets on a TV ad. So you still have caps, for example, on what an individual can give to a political party. But before, there was limits on how much you could coordinate. So if I'm candidate John Doe running for office, I pay a lower rate for my ads than you do as political party John Smith. All right, let's just use those names. So now you can work more directly with the candidates to get that lower rate and pay less, which, why is it a big deal? Well, your dollar's a lot farther. You can, like, drop these limits on, you can just funnel money hand over fist into these campaigns. That's a big deal for the airwaves. So TV stations are going to see a lot of stuff going on this fall, like always. In looking at this decision, my first question was, who's that benefit the most in Wisconsin? The answer I got back was probably Derek Van Orden in Western Wisconsin. So Rebecca Cook is not the nominee yet for Democrats, has not won the primary, so faces one. But she's outraised Van Orden two quarters in a row. I think she's up to $6.5 million raised so far this period. She had more money in the bank than he did end of March. We'll get new reports mid-July. I'll show us what else is going on. But with this decision, Van Orden could, I stress could, wipe all that away, because the NRCC has a lot more money than the DCCC. In fact, the Republicans up and down the ballot have, or political structure, have more money than Democrats. So RNC had like $125 million in the bank last quarter, or last reporting period. The DNC had a negative balance of $3.5 million. That should just illustrate, like, what's going on. So you have candidates, Democratic candidates, outraising Republican counterparts, but the party structure can now, like, level that playing field. Now, for Van Orden, though, to make it really matter, he has to, one, remain a top target this fall. We've all known that, you know, you see all these maps rating rate seats around the country. We know that the redistricting efforts in many states has tilted the playing field maybe a little bit to Republicans in terms of, like, raw seats. So how many seats are actually in play this fall? we'll see. And how deep do you have to go in a red seat to protect that majority? What I mean by that is, like, Trump, Van Orden won by like less than 3 points in 2024. Will Republicans say, hey, we're plus six and better, basically, for us? That's where our focus is going to be. True swing seats? Are they going to try and pick up seats? I don't know yet. What's the environment look like come mid-October? So that's one thing. Two, don't forget the state Democratic Party and Republican parties both have federal accounts. So in theory, they can use those accounts to raise money to help their candidates. The Democratic Party of Wisconsin has outraised the Republican Party of Wisconsin through their federal accounts every month since February of 2021. And yes, I have a spreadsheet that tracks that every month. I know, it's crazy. So there are those kinds of things you got to watch. Like, how is this going to help Van Orden? Will it? And then the final thing is, at some point, there are just diminishing returns from TV ads. Cook announced this week, I think, $3 million in a $3 buy from August through November, kind of assuming she's going to win the primary, which is probably a good bet. But $3 million already laid down. I think she spent around $4.5, $5, $6 million, somewhere in there, in the entire cycle in 2024. So she's getting a head start. There's a marker for how much she has in the bank, what she can spend. Will Van Orden be able to catch up? And again, will there be just so many ads that people drown it out after a while?
You know, and we should mention sort of like the arguments that were put forward. So it was a 6-3 decision, conservatives versus liberal justices. And the argument that won is essentially that it would have been a First Amendment violation, a violation of these parties' ability to express their political speech to the fullest extent covered by the Constitution. And then the argument against it was that this would open the door for sort of corruption, for quid pro quo. And so one of the things that these political parties have that, for example, super PACs and other sort of dark money groups don't have is that we can see who is putting the money in. And so it will also be interesting to watch, in the same way that during, you know, the 2025 Supreme Court race here, Elon Musk, J.B. Pritzker, George Soros, the U-Lines, all of these different huge names kind of pouring in, which of those types of names are starting to, you know, sort of direct these national contributions in which way. So, again, one of the attorneys that I spoke to said that he's waiting to see sort of which billionaire is going to be the first to write the big check to one of these national organizations.
One definite parallel between Wisconsin and from 2015 and the federal law is that the line I've heard of, oh, this will strengthen parties and create a disincentive to give to dark money groups because you can have more coordination. I don't get the impression from anybody I've spoken with in Wisconsin at all that they've lessened the emphasis on dark money groups. There are some people who just want to give to those groups because they want their names in the news or in disclosure reports. I'm not going to bet anybody that you'll see fewer dark money ads this fall because of this, decision in Wisconsin.
I agree. And speaking of the election coming up, a couple quick little updates in the governor's race. Scott and I talked a little bit last week about some of the social media posts that Mandela Barnes made about Sarah Rodriguez. And then this week that escalated a little bit. His campaign sent out a press release about this. Again, this is about a certain amount of money that she took from We Energies while she was in the assembly. Barnes has made, you know, utility rates a big part of his campaign. And so he basically said, I don't take their money. I don't vote for their tax loopholes. And then Sarah Rodriguez came out and said, basically, Mandela Barnes walked away from being a lieutenant governor so that he could lose a U.S. Senate race. I have won. Now he's making false political attacks. And so kind of an escalation of the heat that's been in this relatively friendly Democratic race so far.
So there's 6 weeks to go from Tuesday coming up until the primary. It's not been very loud, to your point. We haven't seen that many ads. Group backing Barnes on Friday announced a six-figure buy on digital. I went and looked at the disclosure reports for the state, $175,000 so far. Don't want to diminish that much money, but it's not a huge buy to influence things. But we're not seeing big, giant media buys, so what's going to shake this race up in the final 6 weeks?
And then the other kind of, you know, we talk a lot about these TV ads and those kinds of buys, but there's a whole other world of media out there that a lot of people pay attention to. Not necessarily myself. This week I watched my first ever political live stream because Fran Hong was on the Hassan Piker show. And this is a sort of interesting, again, the way that her campaign is run a little bit different. It's targeting a different kind of voter base, younger, perhaps more sort of disaffected. And then Hassan Piker is this kind of Marxist bro personality, one of the most kind of successful and prolific streamers out there. She went on his program. She raised $57,000. She was on another program right beforehand, Mike from PA, also sort of famous progressive streamer, raised $35,000, I think, with him. And so sort of an interesting tactic there, but it has also drawn some amount of condemnation. Hassan Piker has said things like, America deserved 9/11. He later said he meant that, it was sort of the chickens coming home to roost in terms of American foreign policy decisions. He's made a lot of comments about Israel that has made Jewish communities very uncomfortable. I talked to Ann Jacobs about this. She said, essentially, why would you platform these sort of like virulent anti-Semites? Mike from PA called Jews a false and demonic ethnicity. He later said he was talking about Zionism, which is a political ideology. So it's this also kind of interesting calculus of like, how do you reach those types of voters? And then what do you do about the fact that you might be alienating people who are part of your base, your more traditional base?
So a couple of notes. So Tuesday was in the fundraising period. So this is a nice little last minute boost for Hong to go out there and grab donations. This report's July 15th. We'll see how successful she was. I also spent my first time on Twitch watching a stream, new for me. I didn't know who Mike from PA was until I started making some calls and found out some comments that he made. Hong's campaign said they were not aware of the comment about demonic stuff until it came up later. Pushed back and said, hey, we're going places that demonstrations don't go to have conversations. You should also ask Tom Tiffany, the front runner for the GP nomination, about Dan O'Donnell, who joked or called for the assassination of Tim Walz, governor of Minnesota. I asked people out this week, like, is Hong trying to make the tent too big in some ways? What I mean by that is, yeah, these guys have big reach. I think Hassan Piker has 10 million social media followers. But are you opening yourself up to, like, this complaint of, oh, you are at least playing footsie with anti-Semites? And that's not for me to judge, but that's just, like, something's going to come up. And the answer I got was, there is a danger there. At the same time, think about what's been going on in this country for the last 20 years. People have been angry now for two solid decades. And I go back to 2006, as the Iraq War drove the election then. Now, 08 wasn't so much. There was actually a hope election in 08. 10, Tea Party. 12, reprieve. 14, health care rollout. 16, Donald Trump. 16 was Trump with anger about the system and blowing it up, essentially. 18 was anger about Donald Trump. 2020 was COVID. 22 was Dobbs. 2024 is immigration and affordability. When are people going to finally feel like comfortable again? That's a huge question. And Hong may be able to tap into that rip it all down type mentality of, we're so tired of being told to take the safe route, or the Tony Evers milk toast, I mean, the nice way, Tony, candidate who's going to win because they're nice. We want to shake up the system. Is she tapping it? Could she drive an electorate this fall that would be younger, more diverse, more engaged? I mean, think about the other candidates. Who's really going to drive a different electorate this fall if they are the nominee for Democrats? I don't know the answer to that.
Yeah, I mean, I've said this before on the show, but the level of energy that I see around Hong's campaign is not, I don't see that around the other campaigns, but in both sort of positive and negative ways. Like, her supporters are very passionate about her message because it is sort of less incrementalist. It does have this kind of broader platform. And her detractors are kind of equally angry and concerned about her, you know, alignment with DSA. Tom Tiffany also jumped on the fact that she appeared with Hassan Piker. And to your point, you know, when I spoke with her team, they also denounced anti-Semitism, denounced some of his comments, but essentially said, you don't have to agree with everything a person has ever said in order to speak with them, to have these conversations, and to show up in places that Democrats traditionally haven't. So again, these conversations about where is the Democratic Party going, both nationwide and in terms of Wisconsin, and part of that's being answered in this primary. Yeah. Very interesting things to talk about and think about. We had a little bit of movement with the congressional redistricting cases. So these are these two separate challenges to our congressional maps. One is an anti-competitive gerrymander, or an argument that it's an anti-competitive gerrymander. One is that it's a partisan gerrymander. These went before these panels of lower judges. The lower judges said, actually, we cannot hear this. And now they are back before the Supreme Court. Supreme Court says that they have scheduled oral arguments for September 16th in both of these cases.
And that will be with a 5-2 liberal majority, not 4-3. Remember, Chris Taylor is sworn in August 1st, I believe. So we got our first view of, like, the first opportunity to see Chris Taylor in action as a Supreme Court justice. with the schedule for this fall.
Right, and so depending on how long this takes, it could be something that is consequential in 2028, but certainly, you know, no time before then, at the very least. Also this week, DPI is required, the Department of Public Instruction is required to put out a report every year about general school aides, that is how much money they get from the state. And then this year, $5.6 billion is going out to schools. That's unchanged from previous years. Nearly 60% of Wisconsin school districts are going to receive less in general aid for the upcoming school year. Madison, the second largest school district in the state, has the largest decrease, and so that is probably going to translate into higher property taxes here in Madison.
As you look, you go, homeowner. So, yes, here's the key thing to remember. So general school aid is the biggest pot of money that the state sends to school districts. It factors into this formula where you have a cap on how much you can spend per kid between state aid and property taxes. When you have a decrease in state aid, you can backfill it in property taxes. Now, key to remember is people weren't happy about their bills they got in December. We won't see the impact of this until after the election in November. But you can bet there'll be a lot of people unhappy about the fact their bills are going to go up even more because of what's going on. Two, there's an opportunity here for Tom Tiff to keep hammering the 400-year veto that Governor Evers put in the budget in 23-25 that extends for 400 years, these annual increases. And my question is, who can actually harness this issue in a good way to help them? Is Tom Tiff the only one? Can Democrats? There was going to be a small fix in the surplus package that failed in the state Senate. Is that going to hurt anybody, especially Democrats in the Senate, who voted against that package?
Right. And can Democrats effectively make the argument of, no, once we properly fund public schools, this will kind of go away? I look forward to seeing what my rent will increase to as soon as I rescind my lease. This brings us to the stock report. Last week, we talked a little bit about the things that were going away as of July 1st, I believe it was yesterday. I can't keep track of the calendar. The start of the new fiscal year. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about things that are coming on board, and one of which is Medicaid expansion for postpartum moms.
So it kicked in July 1st. This has been a long time coming. Robin Voss, the Assembly Speaker, had been the kind of impediment to this for quite some time. Now he is moving on and kind of acquiesced on this issue. We're different in Wisconsin. A lot of places, a lot of states, they have an effective date of July 1st or January 1st. We don't. Basically, the governor signs the bill and it's published. It takes effect. It's law. There are a handful of issues, though, that kind of kicked in this week. One was this. Gail's Law expanded screening for breast cancer for those who have, I think, high-density breast tissue. That's a new requirement for healthcare plans to cover those screenings. There are some smaller things like the budget expanded this like vape registry list to hemp products, hemp producers, as of like July 1st. There's a new sales tax exemption for nuclear fusion technology, I believe, one for contract research. And if you're a Gold Star family, you don't have to pay the personalization fee for your license plate. So smaller things like that, but not a whole lot kicks in on that date, Wisconsin, but a few examples of what kind of is going on.
And if you work for a school district, you have to develop your cell phone ban policy. That's the other one that kicks in. We should say also that with the breast cancer screening bill, folks with private insurance will see that kick in when their insurance turns over at the new year. Mixed this week is Sarah Rodriguez.
So I'm sure you guys talked last week about the whole thing that Missy is dropping out. And in the days after that, I've been asking, like, okay, does this make a big deal for Sarah? And the answer I got back was, yes, but she could use more people dropping out. Look, I hate to harp on media buys, but they're a sign of, like, how much money you have and your supporters have. Right now, the last check I did with Ad Impact, the group backing Rodriguez is, like, $923,000 spent, which sounds like a lot, but it's not statewide media buys. Joel Brennan spent $445,000, okay? Kelly Royce has done $500,000, mostly on streaming and digital. David Crowley's group is on $117,000, but has basically been dark, effectively, for the last few weeks. None of that is enough money to vault them into the top tier. The top tier is basically Vandella Barnes, Francesca Hong, and Sarah Rodriguez getting close. So if you're Rodriguez, you want to see, like Miss Hughes called for last week, others to drop out. But Kelda's touting her $500,000 buy. Brennan's upping his buy. Crowley touted the firefighters endorsing him. That's not the body language somebody's going to drop out of the race. The other challenge for Rodriguez is, look what happened in New York and Denver. Now, New York, by itself, you could say, oh, it's just this one-off thing, it's those crazy New Yorkers in very liberal, big, giant city, New York. But in Denver, a 29-year incumbent lost to a Democratic Socialist, I think was 29 or 30 years old. It's not just about policies, right? The person who lost was very progressive. The person who ran against her, though, was Democratic Socialist, younger, not an incumbent. And you see the base saying, we want something more aggressive. This is not enough to just say, I don't like Trump or I'm anti. You got to go fight. We need to see, talk to us about affordability. What is Reagan selling right now? The ads that are running for a group, which they're good general election ads, talking about being a nurse, background health care. She's fought against Trump. She won this assembly district that was Republican in 2020. All great election messages for November. But what you talk about affordability right now, that is the driving issue for Democrats. And you're just, people I talk to are not hearing enough from those guys to really get it. And if you're a Kel DeRoy's or David Crowley or Joel Brennan, you're not talking, you don't have enough amplification of your message to get that across. Now, Francesca, totally tapped in. Mandela, trying to talk about it. Mandela, it's interesting, if you talk to people, he's kind of been overshadowed a bit recently because of Francesca and all this attention on her and the Twitch streams and how much she's raising and the stance she's taking. Don't forget, though, we're dorks, okay? And I mean, the nicest way possible, especially about you. Most people are not on X every day following like these tweets about what's going on. They're not reading finance reports. They're not reading stuff. They are waiting for like 2 weeks out from the primary to go, okay, who's running for governor again? What do I got to pay attention to? So for Mandela, you could argue he still has this great reservoir of name ID. If he just finds a way to tap into that reminder, like what you liked about me in 2022, besides losing to Ron Johnson, I've got a path to still win the nomination and beating Francesca. If you're a Republican, meanwhile, you're going, this is awesome. These guys are not communicating very much. They're focused on each other, starting to snipe back and forth. And oh, by the way, Francesca Hong, really a good shot to be the nominee. Tom Tiffany is up to more than $4 million laid down on TV. He's almost unanswered on the airwaves, talking about this folksy, you betcha kind of persona. He's building a very good ground game. The state GOP has like lost its really kind of its pitch as a turnout operation. Democrats in Wisconsin still do it very well. The state GOP, not really anymore. You need a good, if you're a statewide campaign, your own operation. Ron Johnson built one in 2022. Tom Tiffany probably going to tell me he's doing the same thing right now. He's basically unrivaled in doing these things, and that's great for him. And he's just, fingers crossed, Francesca Hong, he would love to see her tonight. I know they put out this memo about what a danger she was, but he really thinks that they think that she would be a very easy target to beat because of the things like being a socialist, saying she has dreams of world out prisons, like going on Hassan Piker's Twitch stream. These are all things that give you baggage, unless Francesca could create this different turnout, which is what Trump did in 2016. Trump didn't win in 16 because he inspired Republicans. He brought out of the woodwork people who are like, I don't care about politics. These people don't talk to me. They turned out in mass for him. That was his key in 2016. Can Hong do it in 2026?
Yeah, and I think one of the arguments that you hear for Rodriguez a little bit is that she can beat Tom Tiffany a little bit more. And so that's also part of the calculus that you see Democrats doing is, who do I like, but also who can win in November. Following this week is Green Bay City Clerk Celestine Jeffries, who for the second time has sent out too many absentee ballots.
So are Wisconsin elections, for the most part, secure and accurate? Yes. Are there administrative errors? Yes, there are. Does that give Donald Trump and his supporters ample opportunity to cry foul about what's happening? Yes. And when you do these things in the state's third largest city, you are opening the door to this coming up this fall if things don't go Republicans' way. So this latest episode was Jeffries sent out duplicate ballots, absentee ballots. So the mailing deadline was last week. Sent them out. They realized there are voters in 8 wards who may have been affected. They haven't told us how many. They haven't told us like how this happened. Just basically, it was administrative error. It's all we've been told so far. Printing error so far, and they'll make sure count is one vote per person. Okay, great. But just in April, they sent out 152 duplicate ballots. Now, a complaint was filed over that with the Elections Commission. Basically, a local Republican Party official helped the state GOP filed this complaint and said, "Hey, we need to have a corrective action plan. We need something to fix this." In her response, Jeffries said it was not illegal to send voters multiple ballots. That was a new one to some people I talked to, I'm not going to lie. The Elections Commission this week, the staff prepared materials for next week's meeting and said she likely broke the law in doing this, and no, you can't send multiple ballots. Yes, there are examples where if you get a ballot in the mail and it's damaged, you can ask for a second one, but there are specific procedures in the law of how to do that. You can't just send out like a bunch of ballots and have it be okay. That's not how it works. From the staff, at least, commissioners have final say. Now, next week, the commission will vote on that original complaint. They also are going to address this latest issue. And the thing is, like, look, we've had issues with Wisconsin elections before. Madison clerk forgot to count, missed 92 ballots in the November election, right? Her replacement, after she resigned, had some issues getting ballots to the polling sites on time to be counted in April. A person who claimed responsibility for that has now been reassigned. So there are issues. Don't forget Kathy Nicholas, the old Waukesha County clerk. She forgot to report the returns in a couple communities, which flipped a Supreme Court race by 14,000 votes. Okay, there are problems out there. But there are consequences. Madison clerk, she resigned. Kathy Nicholas, under intense pressure, did not run for election after that big snafu in 2011. What's a consequence for Celestine Jeffries? I've asked the mayor of Genrick, who's a former Democrat lawmaker, his office at least, do you have confidence in her? No response. Okay, maybe he does. But when you have these problems popping up, you open that door to this fall, if things go south for Republicans, say, ah, but there are problems, and here's an example of the problems.
Yeah, and so at a time that, you know, confidence in elections, as we reported on last week, is kind of at an all-time low, it definitely does not do favors for that system. So lots to pay attention to in the next coming weeks. Until then, I am Anie Van Wagenendonck.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
See you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.